Hello, and welcome to the CCEN podcast series. This morning, I have the pleasure of interviewing Michael Chu, who is a member of the Climate Change Education Network and a colleague of ours who currently lives in rural Victoria. Hi, Michael, how are you?
Hi, Peter. I'm well. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. As we get started, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and why you're part of CCEN?
Yeah, I mean, well, firstly, I'm a human being at living in a particularly, you know, monumentous time in history, human and ecological history, I suppose. So things a lot bigger than myself. But myself, I grew up, I suppose I grew up on a little farm in Ravenswood, which is about 20 minutes from Bendigo. And so I'm here in Castlemaine, about 20 minutes from my birthplace there. And I suppose those early experiences, with a multitude of animals, and, you know, welcome and pets or the animals that would, you know, just come by and all that. I suppose that really, sensitized me to having a connection with nature, the natural world, and I suppose, developing a sensitivity to want to protect it, and want to sort of educate and inform other people about it. And I suppose, you know, we moved to the city for educational purposes later, and at university, you know, studying environmental studies and other things. But like probably a lot of people on your show, you know, the real education was outside the classroom, and I became involved in a range of different sort of environmental activist activities, you know, blocking roads to have sustainable street parties and that kind of thing, to organizing sort of conferences and, you know, sort of work, you know, being in squats and activist convergences and I suppose creating spaces for, education, as it were, outside the sort of formal context. I suppose I'm really grateful for having, because it can be a position of privilege to be able to spend the time to be involved in that. But I was able to find, I suppose my people, I suppose people that are also passionate about the environment and doing what we can about it, finding a sort of sense of identity as a change maker in those communities, and a sense of purpose. I feel that was the real education. I got bits of paper from universities that said I was educated, but those, what I now call communities of practice, which I didn't have that language, particular language back then, was the real education. And I suppose that sort of a lot of those early campaigns were for more local issues, transport or, you know, forest issues and that. But later I sort of had some opportunities to go to India and work with some NGOs over there, in child rights or women's rights. And that was also another form of education outside the classroom around, the sort of global justice dimensions of environmental issues and things that might have, you know, learned in the classroom, but again, it was outside in the fields and learning, you know, from people without any bits of paper or any qualifications, all that, but their lived experiences. So that was very sort of transformative. So when I went back, I then worked in a range of different environmental NGOs. And I always had a bit of a sort of tension between the local issues and the global issues. And I'm also sort of half Chinese myself. I was born here. My dad was from, you know, Malaysian Chinese, Malaysia. So there's that kind of cultural aspect. So that sort of informed some of my sort of subsequent work and for my master's, I did a master's in sociology, which is, again, a really rare sort of program that unfortunately doesn't really exist as much anymore, but that really looks at radical transformative educational approaches, Freirean sort of perspectives and ecological imaginaries and that kind of stuff, with a really amazing group of people. And I was like a 30-year-old, I was probably one of the youngest in the group, and it was often my co-students who were my teachers in a sense, because they'd come from all sorts of avenues, and really, again, I guess opened my mind further up around what is sort of environmental education. And there was someone I think she was in a meditation teacher and had a sort of mindfulness background, and she was sort of using tea ceremonies with marginalized youth and as a sort of form of practice to get them connected to being present, but also then their sort of place and environment. And anyway, those kind of meeting those people and seeing the breadth of where, yeah, and what education can be was, again, another experience of sort of my education, what I can sort of weave in. And I suppose, and through that master's, I did some work in Western India around groundwater, and and again, we're sort of just blown away by, the local communities. And, you know, with groundwater, it's invisible water, our relationship, what's our relationship with something we can't see. And it was amazing sort of working with PhotoVoice and using creative methods of storytelling with some of these villages there and students in primary and secondary schools, and just how they'd tell the stories about the relationship with water, and the sort of ambidextrous nature between that they can navigate between sort of scientific, engineering, hydrological perspectives, but also their own specific cultural relationships with water and that kind of thing, which is fascinating. And I suppose the last the next sort of chapter was doing a PhD from there. And I think that was after a stint in local government in sustainable education, which was doing some good work, but it was good to see that certain people thrive in those environments, government environments, and I'm not one of them. So I'm grateful to have that opportunity to do a few things and learn, it probably then propelled me back into sort of research work, and I did a PhD which was kind of drawing upon those strands of sort of creative practice, cross-cultural storytelling, and environmental education. And that was what I called sort of Portraits of Change, which was working with young people across Australia, Bangladesh and China, and using creative methods such as photography, community mapping, and those kind of things to look at the young people's relationship to the natural world and how they'd like to take action to protect it and that kind of thing. So I suppose it's sort of been a I always like, is it Joanna Macy who talks about the spiral? There's a spiral. That you might be going in a direction, but I've always been circulating in that direction rather than being a linear arrow flying at a target so that's probably the spiral is the shape that describes myself and my relationship to environmental education now. Yeah.
What an incredible story, Michael. Thank you. And I love that that visual image of a spiral trajectory towards a career as you're working it out and taking up opportunities. That's amazing. Can you tell us a bit about how you found CCEN and how you've been able to engage with the network?
To be honest, I can't remember how I actually found it. It was probably on a website somewhere, or I probably in the sort of wilderness, the post PhD wilderness, where you're talking to people about ideas or postdoc opportunities, and you know, and I think people sort of feel a bit sorry for those in the wilderness, and they want to feed you with all sorts of possible ideas. And so one of the I think one of the ideas from somebody was, you know, oh, you should, you know, touch base with CCN, and you know, there's some you know, interesting folk there that might be aligned to you know, your perspectives, and that so I think that was, I'm not sure whether 6 months ago or a year, I'm not sure. I've had a baby in the meantime, so that does strange things to perception of time. So it's I'm very new to the network, and I've only been able to attend a few meetings, and some of those having to being with sort of co-parenting responsibilities, so had a little baby competing for my attention. But it's been great to sort of hear from you know, some really interesting, exciting projects have been going on there.
I think you'd be a great person to ask what you think CCEN is, and maybe then tell us a bit about what you'd like it to be.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. It's from the least informed can hopefully have some gems or something like that. Yeah, I mean, from my experience, and I literally can't remember any aims or objectives documents, but it seems to be, I guess, a network of people that are doing environmental education, and I suppose climate change education is a big part of that. But it seems like it spans, I suppose, people working on more theoretical, I guess, reflections around environmental education, to do with more sort of practitioner orientated and outdoor ed and that kind of thing. So that's my take on it, and I suppose I'm drawn to these kind of communities of practice because I feel through the as I said, the spiral that I've taken, I've usually found myself on the margins of communities of practices around, particularly in the sort of creative methods and the environmental, or the critical or the practitioner, you know, there's always been on fences, and that. So I enjoy a community practice where there's, you know, there's a whole bunch of some black sheep as well that are also sitting on fences. So you get all these different perspectives, and there's less, you know, turf wars about a discipline and so forth, that kind of stuff. That's how I see it from my limited perspective.
What a lovely idea of thinking about members of CCN as the black sheep of a community. I think that's really visual, and I find it very appealing, so thanks for that.
Right, okay. I'm glad.
I want to talk a little bit about climate change education. I know you've mentioned it a couple of times, and you know, from the narrative of your experience, I'm curious about what you think climate change education is, and again, what should it be?
Yeah. Well, there's, wow, it's sort of that's a big question, and I'll try to draw in some strands of what I feel it. It'll probably be more like what I feel like it should be, because I do work in environmental NGO at the moment. It's the education part is, that's only sort of one part of it. So, So in terms of what I feel it should be, I mean, I feel, and I might use the term climate education and environmental education, so I mean, interchangeably. Because of, anyway, I won't go into all the reasons, but I'm sure you understand why. I feel like there's a cross-cutting aspect to it that I suppose when you look at, whether it's this, you know, the STEM areas themselves or the humanities to, you know, well, I think of three, the STEM, humanities and the arts, in a sense, and because I suppose that's my background, my first degree is in mathematical physics. And I guess it, I feel it's sort of, I suppose if you think historically in those disciplinary areas, you know, those say with STEM and that weren't cut up into as fine discipline as they are now. And so the people that were having those forms of education were also educated in a broader, you know, Renaissance-style sense, which included the issues of the day. And at our point in, you know, the ecological history and the Anthropocene and sixth major extinction and so forth, that's, you know, one of the key issues of the day. So I feel that that should be, should inform, I suppose, yeah, those STEM areas, obviously the humanities areas in terms of, I feel, you know, I suppose the frames that we put to use around education. I mean, you know, I sort of think of David Orr's paper, you know, and what education's for in that planetary sense and that kind of thing. Or Thomas Berry's, you know, in The Great Work and how he talks about the role of the university and the institution in that sense at this point in history. And I suppose, yeah, getting back to the humanities, it feels like there, in the context of environmental education, there is really to enable us to see our own different relationships with the environment in different ways, because we're coming out of, you know, centuries of Cartesian instrumental relationships with nature, and those don't, we have to do a lot of work to recover the types of relationships with nature, the plurality of those relationships that existed before these dominant knowledge paradigms have taken over. So I see, yeah, the humanities is really a key part in you know, unearthing and interrogating, reinterrogating and providing a space for you know, yeah, considering those different relationships now and our role at the moment. And of course, within the creative arts areas, I feel that that's the, you know, as I can't remember, was it Bill McKibben or one of the quotes, you know, saying, well, there's been enough climate scientists and UNFCCC reports, and we need to draw on, you know, the creative arts really to not only in a instrumental educational form of like, hey, you know, let's have films about climate change or whatnot. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It's really around encouraging those different ways of thinking that we need to do to educate, you know, the next generation of leaders and to look at the, you know, the jobs that when I worked in council, I had a title that was called sustainability officer, and that didn't exist 20 years ago. There was no such thing in local government. So the types of work that will be in the future don't exist now. But if we're to live in harmony with ecological processes, there'll be a whole different ranges of relating to and managing and different forms of looking at what management means and that kind of thing there. Yeah, so that's what I feel is important, and that's only talking about the sort of formal educational sense. That, as I said, for my journey, you know, a lot of my education happened outside of that context, and I feel like, you know, it can really civil society has a huge role in terms of the sort of the action learning that you know, and the project-based learning and whatnot, you know, and the opportunities to, you know, partner with formal educational institutions and that kind of thing to provide, students with real learning in their own communities, using their own knowledges, and developing their own relationships, which tend to be hard, well, in my experience, harder to get in the sort of formal educational context there. So I'm a real believer in sort of project-based learning and learning through volunteerism, you know, that kind of stuff as well. So I could go on, but hopefully there's some coherence there.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful, Michael. What a great trajectory and travel you've taken us through environmental ed and climate change education. What do you think our key messages are for the future of climate change education?
Key messages. Well, I think a key message that comes to mind, sort of in a way, kind of comes from a deep ecology perspective for me, which is recognizing ourselves as one, you know, species in a web of other species and other beings that you know, have equal or differing rights and responsibilities and that. So I think the future would be how do we educate people around not only seeing, you know, it's that different, there's a sort of epistemological shift, a massive one, of course. And for those kind of shifts, I think experiential methods from deep ecology, such as, you know, council all beings and all, you know, Jonah Macy's sort of stuff, there's a great there's great toolboxes of experiential techniques around that. But then, of course, it kind of brings into, I suppose I tend to think of, you know, different forms with environmental management and jurisprudence, I suppose, with rights of nature and that kind of thing there. So I think it'll be really, like, I guess it's the sort of, you know, if there's sort of a participation turn, you know, and then there's the animal turn and all that, but it's sort of like, it feels like there's the kind of, you have to need to put them together, which, or whether you call them multi-species or what's already happening, that kind of multi-species understanding of how we get participation from the more than human, and to what, how are we able to be educated to allow us to step into these positions where we can involve non-human stakeholders in everything that we do, whether it's the formal classroom or it's the land management or it's teaching fine art or what or whatnot. I feel like it's the participation and the expanding the sort of subjectivity there, that's where we need to take it. And it's sort of, I suppose I'm biased because I did a PDC at Permaculture Design Certificate the year before. So I've sort of had those sort of permaculture, those sort of systems principles a bit in my mind as well. And I feel like, you know, and that's just one systems thinking framework, of course, but I feel like bringing different forms of system thinking, I think would be really important in environmental education. And with that, complexity and that, which will more accurately represent the world that we're going into now, that's already happening, and the huge shifts and that of the structures that we've had for a long time, which aren't working, economic, social, so forth. And we need those kind of systems thinking to navigate through a time of transition, to have as softer transition as possible there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you, Michael. Very far-reaching and you know, lovely messages and images were coming up while you were talking. So I guess what would be the challenge then, or the action perhaps for a CCEN going forward? What do you think it is that we need to do?
That's another good question. I think it would be interesting to maybe broaden the concept of, you know, in terms of environmental educators, because you know, I think people, because a network like this, any kind of community practice, it's a collection of people that identify as, you know, that identity of being a climate change educator, environmental educator, outdoor educator, so forth. And there's, you know, there's sort of, I guess, professional associations, there's kind of that specific thing. But as I've been saying, you know, it is such a broad perspective. And so you have artists, you know, you have, yeah, people working in government, you have other people that mightn't think of themselves as an environmental educator or climate change educator that could bring really, fantastic perspectives to the network. So, it's almost like you could imagine one of those mind maps kind of thing with environmental educator or education in the middle and, you know, seeing a branches. So you can sort of see how broad that is. Yeah, because I think networks is only as broad as the members, really, and being able to, attract different members that bring different perspectives is really critical. So I think that's really one part of it. And I don't know, as part of that, I mean, and I'm just thinking in terms of the other worlds I've inhabited, whether it's the creative artist practitioner world or the sort of NGO or local government sort of worlds. Yeah, I suppose seeing what interfaces it could be with the community of practices within those different worlds. I remember when I was in local government and there was sort of there's behavior change, I think there's environmental behavior change network or behavior change network and that kind of thing, which was more for the sort of local government, but it did overlap a lot with environmental education. And so being able to, I guess, see those perspectives would be great. That'd be one point. And then I suppose that other point, I suppose bringing in this environmental justice and those international perspectives there, I think would be really interesting because this is what we're all bumbling along in the 21st century to try to respond to these, you know, how these issues in environmental education. There's people all around the world doing that. And I think maybe particularly Australia in the position, the privileged position and the whole punching far above the per capita emissions, et cetera, that we have, there's this extra responsibility there and extra resourcing, I would say, around how can we support communities of practice environmental education overseas, particularly in the global south, because I feel that's our responsibility. And the counterpoint to that, which I haven't mentioned as much, is, of course, First Nations, Indigenous perspectives as well, which is literally right under feet. And as I speak, there's the Kalimna Park here, you know, the Jarrah land that has been thoroughly destroyed in the gold rush. And, you know, the scars of that is just all around. So, definitely Indigenous knowledge perspectives. And how can we support, you know, it'd be great to have some sort of scholarship for Indigenous environmental educators, for instance, that kind of thing. How can we support that would be another thing that comes to mind.
Wow, there's some great ideas in there. That's fantastic. Michael, as we come to the end of our podcast, is there anything else you would like to leave us with?
Goodness. All sorts of things have been flying out of my mouth, so I'm not even sure what I've said. But it's wonderful to be able to share these perspectives with the network, and I think it's a reminder for me about dialogue. Because before this, I didn't think about anything that I'd say necessarily, and it's just that power of providing these spaces to share ideas and that and you know, both you and myself are quite privileged people in these spaces, so again, I guess it comes back to, you know, how can we provide spaces like this for people that are less privileged but might have really, you know, equally important contributions to the environmental education in a broad sense there.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you. What a great sentiment, and you know, possibly lots of practices for us to engage with and think about. Michael, thank you for your efforts today. It's been really, really lovely to hear from you, and we look forward to seeing you some more in CCEN.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll see if you might see Baby Luna as well making appearance. Hopefully,
well,
with
welcome
smiles
her.
rather than cries.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much. And look forward to another podcast coming soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Bye bye.